This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning, traders. I hope you guys are ready for pre-market prep. Yes, Spencer Israel is in Vegas enjoying it. We'll get some reports from the ground in Vegas, but first things first, let's get into the market today. Today we got overnight, we'll talk about the stock futures. We're going to talk about the end of the quarter fireworks, China's full access, GME stock split. We'll get into a little bit of the treasuries. We do got a guest today, Raggy Horner, Managing Director of Futures at Simpler Trading. So just stick around, guys. We have a great show. We'll get into some ticker time so you guys can throw some stocks in the chat. And of course, let's get pre-market prep started.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
All right. Get the guys going here. Got Dennis Dick, Joel Condon. How you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, Mitch. Let's do a quick rundown of the futures, and got a lot of topics to cover today. S&P's up 1950 at 45.50 and a quarter. Crude down $1.50, 98.78. Gold and silver going the same way, lower. Gold down 20.60, 19.33.40. Silver down 29 cents, 24.84. Bitcoin, that's trading lower too by $645 at 45,090. And Ethereum futures, they're down just a couple bucks here, 32.91.50. So, Dennis, you were complaining about things being boring and closes and not much going on after hours.
Yeah, we had a very exciting close again. So twice in March, we had the option expiration close, which obviously the big Shopify gap up at the end was probably what everybody talked about the most from that. But we had a wild close yesterday too, and sell imbalances across the board. And you can see what the S&P futures did and the SPY did in the last 20 minutes. They just dumped and dumped and dumped. And they were dumping everything. And there was gap downs on the close, some big ones. I wrote a few of them down. I got a few of these. Microsoft was trading around 309.50. Then I got filled at 308.31. Gap down $1 on the closing print. Was immediately back up. I was in the trade for less than 10 seconds, I think, and made a point on it by buying the close with the LOC order limit on close. And then there was just a ton of them. Apple had gap down. Amazon gap down on the closing print. Go across the board. It was pretty much everything gapping down the closing print. And we never looked back. I mean, SPY gap down and on the closing print. And it literally a minute later, it was up 10 handles from there. Because it was all just that huge amount of institutional selling that, boom, gaps it down. The stocks really wanted to be here, though. That's just all those sellers. So they wash them out. And then, you know, the stocks lift back up. And we've been seeing this lift back up overnight and continuing, too. So it never touched that close once again after 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. A lot of stocks, a lot of traders leading into that that closing print. If you got the closing print, then it was good. If you were trying to cover short, some of the dynamics have changed a little bit now. There's been some news on Microsoft regarding the Activision deal, little worries about that. But yeah, I mean, and we're just, it's funny because like I look at the close, I'm like 45, 30, 75. I'm like, that's not the close. I mean, you know, it was immediately up 10 handles. So
it was immediate up 10 handles. And that's, again, you know, what we do at Bright Trading. We provide liquidity into that, meaning, you know, we'll buy into when you see stocks gapping down for order flow reasons. I'm usually willing a willing participant to provide liquidity into that, meaning I will buy into that close. And the way you do that, again, is the limit on close order. You know, this isn't stuff they talk about on other shows because most traders don't understand the different types of order types. But you put an LOC. Let's just take you through the Microsoft example. So I have an algorithm that probably sent out a couple hundred stocks. So, and I got filled on a couple. I got filled on quite a few. But what it does is, you know, you see this huge selling pressure going to the close, like, okay, I want to buy this close because this is just washing out from the huge imbalances that we can physically see on book. And so I think my LOC for Microsoft was probably 310, and I sent that out earlier, maybe 309.5. So I put a limit on close order, 309.5. It trades through that during the regular session. That's fine. You still won't be executed. So you can have your 309.5. It can trade 309.40, but it's marked LOC, so it's only going to execute on the closing print. So if the closing print is obviously below where your LOC buy is, you're going to be executed. So I'm at 309.50. Stock closes, boom, 308. Where was it closed? 308.31. I get filled immediately. And then you can look and you just bring it up and the bids are already at 309.50 because they haven't even moved from where ARCA and NASDAQ, you know, were from the regular session to the after hours session. So, you know, that gap down, the only way to participate in that is to actually have the order out there, sitting out there with that limit on close order.
Boom. It was definitely some fireworks at the end of the day. We saw it come on down. We'll be watching to see what happens here out the gates. Of course, jobs number coming out at 8:30. We'll be watching to see if we get some fireworks off of that number. Let's get into some of the Chinese names. We got a lot to talk about in there. China full access report getting put out today. Chinese authorities are preparing to give the U.S. full access to auditing reports of the majority of 200 plus companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange by mid this year. So making a rare concession to prevent kind of these two economies. And we've had questions about these companies. And today you're seeing a little bit of a lift coming into BABA. But I'm going to actually point us towards first the automakers because they do have Catalyst also to touch on. So LI is rallying here 6.6%. They reported 31,716 vehicle deliveries in March, more than double kind of year over year totals from last March. And then NIO also coming out with their deliveries of 9,985 vehicles in March, an increase of 37.6% from a year ago. NIO's shares were jumping to over 5% in the pre-market. And what do you guys feel about these?
You've
Chinese
got
stocks?
Every Chinese stock, and they don't care about the deliveries. They care that it's a Chinese stock right now. And you have every Chinese stock trading up because of the 5:30 headline breaking from Bloomberg, which I don't know if you can show it in the pro, Mitch. Yeah. If you want to show the headline, just read it right there. But I can read you the headline from the pro, which is the reason that all these Chinese stocks are really lifting now. And it's that shares of U.S. traded China stocks are spiking following Bloomberg report that China weighs giving U.S. full access to audits of most firms. So this was the concern. This is why the U.S. has threatened to delist some of these companies because they're not allowing our auditors to go in and check their books. So we know we have GAAP accounting. They have their own accounting methods over there. So we want to see, hey, you know, are these companies really making the money that they're making, doing what they're doing according to our accounting principles? And China has never allowed us to do that. They're talking about potentially doing that. This was the reason. that these companies were potentially going to get delisted. So it's not surprising you get news, and we don't know what to believe, whether this is true or not, but the algorithms are going to just run with this headline here. And that's why Alibaba trading up 6.7% here today. That's why Baidu trading up 8.5% today. That's why the FXI, that's all of them, is up 4.91%. If you're a Chinese stock, you're trading higher on this because the potential for auditors go in would take all those concerns away about the delistings.
The real question is this an April Fool's joke?
Ha! I never even thought about that, Mitch. That would be a crazy April Fool's joke. Not even funny at all, Mitch, but it very well might not be true. So we know what comes out over there. You know, if somebody talks, oh yeah, we'll talk about it. But they didn't say they're going to do it. They said they're talking about doing it. So, okay. I mean, what does that mean? Yeah, no, nah, we're going to pass on that. And then we go right back to the whole delisting problem. So we don't know what the next headline is going to be. We can only trade the current headline, but the current headline is bullish for those Chinese names. And if you're trading those Chinese names at 5:30, show the chart, Joel, the Baba, the Bobster. I mean, you can see it in the FXI too. You can clearly see it in the FXI, but they all blast off on that Bloomberg report. They were trading higher with the overall market, and then boom, that report comes out from Bloomberg, and obviously significantly higher in the next in that next bar. You can circle, maybe point to it, Joel. We're looking at the top left chart.
Yeah, I got an arrow here.
You can see it right there. Yeah, that's the smallest arrow I've ever seen in my life. I didn't even know that was an arrow, but that's okay. You can see the big bar we're talking about. That is the move off that Bloomberg headline. Obviously, this is a significant move.
Yeah, definitely something to definitely keep watch as these stocks were kind of in a little bit of a battle. Baba even had that gap down that I was looking to see if it was going to fill, but right back on up today.
Yeah, they had a little momentum. They had a higher 4 a.m. open, and then, you know, they moved with the S&Ps too, and the S&Ps were moving up. So a couple catalysts before the actual news came out. So nice move in these stocks.
All right, let's go ahead towards what I think everybody wants to talk about a little bit. As you guys see from my shirts, I got a little bit of crazy eyes on out there. This
what
isn't
is
a bull
that?
There. You see it? It's my crazy cow shirt.
This for the cow guy.
It's the cow guy.
Mitch is the cow guy now.
You got to be a little bull. You see these little horns? Little bull coming out there. We'll see what happens. But let's take a look. GME, guys, news coming out, guys.
Oh, wow.
Stock split. What they're kind of talking about is similar to what Tesla was looking at. They're seeking a stockholder approval for an increase of the common stock of 300,000 shares up towards 1 million shares, and then using part of that to go ahead and kind of split in form of a stock dividend there. They also left room there that they could use some of this money for other reasons. So I do want to mention that. So we'll definitely see what happens here in GME, but pushing in after hours.
Big time pushing here in after hours. Honestly, like, you look and you think, okay, they're not going to run the stock on company fundamentals. The earnings don't appear to be taking off anytime soon. So if you're in there, you're like, well, what can we do to get the stock price higher? Now it's a stock split, and everybody like, oh, stock split. Yay, let's do it. I mean, this company, and you know, obviously they don't talk a lot, you know, so they're just, you know, it's kind of almost closed. Don't even know. They do the 5-minute conference calls, they don't take questions. But I mean, we know it's been disconnected from fundamentals for a long time. The fundamental story will not drive price. So they keep got to doing other things to drive price. Joel calls it financial engineering, which is pretty much what it is. People like stock splits, they're talking about a stock split, they're gonna move it up on it. I mean, I don't know what to say on this story. People say, should I short it? This thing can go wherever it wants. When stocks are completely disconnected from fundamentals, they can go wherever they want. It's all on story. GameStop trades on story. Story cools off, stock starts to come down. Story gets hot again. I mean, they're going to talk about 100 times today on CNBC. The stock split, the stock split, the stock split. But, I mean, you're getting a lift on a stock split. The stock doesn't even need a stock split. It's a $166 stock. There's a million other $166 stocks out there. So I think it's ridiculous that they're splitting the stock, but I get it because that's how they drive the price. They get the story going again. So am I buying it? No, never. Sorry.
It snuck over 200 there and got quickly repelled off 200. So sellers at 200.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about all this stuff. It's actually, it's disappointing to me almost, you know, that this stuff happens where you're getting the company that's literally trying to manipulate the prices higher, in my opinion. So whatever. I mean, GameStop, it's been disconnected forever. AMC lifted up with this last night. That's what you got to know, is the other ones lift up with this. Bed Bath & Beyond, but they're not holding up as well. Like AMC lifted big time last night. Bed Bath & Beyond lifted like over $24 last night. And now it's at 23 only, 22.86. So it's giving it back a lot of it here. So that's somewhat concerning there. If I was trading GameStop, I'd ring the register, but I would have rang the register a hell of a long time ago. So it's, you know, obviously, you know, we don't know what the next headline is going to be breaking from that. Maybe it's going to be NFT stories. Maybe it's going to be whatever buzzword they can come up with. So, and that obviously gets the algorithms all excited and they start buying it up, and then gets retail all excited and they start buying it up. It's its own animal. It does its own thing. It's a stock that I typically stay away from unless I'm just doing a GME AMC pair trade.
Joe, what do you see out there on these?
Big fades, as Dennis mentioned. I mean, there's not going to be a stock split in BBBY or AMC. So got some overhead supply from the last 2 days, and major overhead supply from when the Ryan Cohn, when they ran it to 30. So not sure if you're going to see your pre-market highs.
Like, is that Ryan Cohen on the board there saying, how can we get the price higher? Like, we don't know behind the scenes, and saying, do a stock split, that'll do it. Like, I don't know what is happening in those board meetings. You know, obviously we can't know anything like that. But, you know, I don't get, you know, I don't get the whole, I don't get any of it. I've never got it. You know, maybe that's it. And, you know, obviously I didn't make a lot of money off of it either. I know you did well in the GME for a while there, Joel. You did really well on it.
It was a small trade.
Yeah, but you know, this isn't my cup of tea.
I would have to find the graph, but I did see a statistics out there that say in inflationary environment, often you see those stock splits. So I think it could be also, like you're saying, some financial engineering of how to work your way around in this environment. But definitely one of the things to kind of keep on watch is when it's in the limelight, we want to make sure that we're taking at least a look on these stocks, because they could run today with just a little bit of movement. And like you guys are saying, it's going to be mentioned on a lot of media sites today about the stock split. And a lot of people aren't probably going to do the real research to understand that how is this stock split really coming into the market.
Well, it doesn't do anything. I mean, a stock split, and that's the biggest thing too, you know, for people to consider, is that a stock split really doesn't change anything. The price falls by the amount. All this is the hype and the excitement around a stock split. But when you're splitting like Amazon and Google, it's allowing retail traders to access prices that maybe they couldn't trade, because if you didn't have, you know, and obviously we've talked about, you know, fractional shares, but before fractional shares existed, it's like, okay, well, retail trader of $500 can't even buy a share of Amazon. So that kind of makes sense when you all of a sudden, you know, allow access to a whole different group of investors. But what the hell? It's a $166 stock. How many stocks are $166 on this exchange, Joel?
Hundreds.
500.
Yeah.
And are they all going to split? You know, like, I just think the timing of it is suspect too. The stock runs up, then it starts to leak for 3 days, and the board's like, oh, what can we do here? How can we get the price higher? I honestly think that's going on behind the scenes. I know nothing. I'm not there on the meetings. But when you see a split, I was like, what is the other, what's the purpose of this other than to try to get your stock price to go higher? So I think you should try to grow your stock price by, you know, growing earnings, coming up with, you know, better ideas than doing stock splits. And that's why Berkshire Hathaway, we obviously very much, you know, look at Warren Buffett, who, you know, has never split his Berkshire shares ever. He finally did do the B a number of years ago, but I mean, he grows through earnings the way you're supposed to do. So I think you're putting GameStop in your long-term portfolio, taking a huge risk. I think GameStop, even your short-term portfolio, you're taking a huge risk. It's just not for me.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's transition here. I'm trying to keep us going. We got a lot of topics to go.
Yeah, I've got the jobs number two, Dennis.
Exactly. So that'll be in about 10 minutes. Let's get into Treasury yield inversion here. 5 and the 30 yield inverting for the first time since 2006 on Monday. And then you got the 5 and the 30 again on Friday, once more raising fears of recession. But I did want to bring in here a graphic from none other than Ryan Dietrich. He's on all the time, IPL research here. So let me go ahead and bring this graphic on the screen here. This is all about the yield
a curve inversion. This is for the 2 and the 10. Just want to talk about that. But you can see here, guys, the average S&P 500 index return is about 28.8% here. So you bulls out there, I know that you guys are probably, the bears are talking out there about recession, but there you guys see the return. But what I'm really focusing on here is more the number to the right-hand side of this, which is the month till bull market peaks. And you see on average here, 17.1 months after the market peaks. So we're talking about a year and a half on average from these levels. So what do you guys think based on these stats?
Did we get the official inversion? Did it actually occur here yet? Because they were anticipating that it was going to invert. Yeah. I believe it did occur yesterday, somebody said.
It officially started on Thursday and has been moving back and forth. So that's the problem too.
I give absolutely zero, zero weight to this. It's a story for the media to talk about. And thank you, Ryan Dietrich, for showing that. Oh, real stocks and we got problems. And you just showed four times before the market was up on that. So, yeah. I mean, everybody's speculating the market's going to tank because the yield curve is inverting. They obviously didn't do their homework because the other four times it went up. If you're looking, if you're trying to trade stocks off a yield curve inversion, you know, that we haven't seen in
or invest
2019. You're in the wrong game because this stuff is not going to move price. And honestly, in my opinion, you know, like maybe it does, but for you to even anticipate the correct move, everybody's talking like it's going to be the end of the world. And here 4 for 4, it's up going, you know, by Ryan Dietrich's stats. So, I mean, this is just useless information. Absolutely useless.
I wouldn't even brought it up on the show today if it, you know,
that's all Ryan gives good substance.
I mean, I guess the only thing, if you want to, you know, if you want to look at it, you know, the last, you know, it was 19 months, 22 months, 21 months, and then it was 5.8 months. So when I look at that statistic, you know, that's what kind of jumps out to me. But you can't be worried about inflation and a recession at the same time. So it's going to, you know, let's run the course of inflation and then see what that does to the economy. Doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting just the 17 months. I mean, 17 months is no.
That's the average, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not even like, I mean, we're not talking about this year. We're talking way further out in time. So I think this is what also gets me to the point that, you know, where are we going to see if we're going to see kind of the market kind of continue? I don't think you can just point down directly down because of this. So, of course, we need to continue to see what happens with the Fed and interest
rates. So many other factors in the market, so many other catalysts. So many,
for sure.
So, I mean, in each one of those environments was a different economic environment, different geopolitical circumstances. So, but I mean, they like to talk about it. So
that's it. They give them something to talk about. Isn't that a song?
I don't know.
Let's give them something to talk about. It was a joke. Okay. Bad joke.
All right, let's go ahead. We're going to be watching to see what happens in the jobs numbers. That's going to be coming out in just a few little bit. We got about seven minutes. Towards that. Economists expect about 490,000 jobs were added in March following 678,000 payroll additions in February. So just going to give you guys those expected numbers so that you guys can watch when the number hit the tape. Of course, you guys can keep watch on this also on Benzinga Pro as it hits the tape. So definitely 2 free trial. Just go to pro@benzinga.com. Check it on out, guys. Stick with us. I know Dennis might drop off and pay attention to that jobs number.
I will in a few minutes. I'll give you another 3 minutes, though.
No worries. Let's go ahead. I want to take a look at some of the utilities. I feel like this has been a sector that a lot of people have been missing the move on up. Joel was talking about it a lot on at the close yesterday, how we were seeing some of these moves. And I mean, look at the XLU there. If you compare it to kind of all the sectors, a lot of times, and I saw a stat on this, that in portfolios, this is usually the smallest percentage in the diversity of portfolios. And you could see it's been a major winner this year. What about you, Joel? I wanted to ask you, do you have a lot of energy?
And that's what I was just going to say. Not enough. I think they're just lumping it into the into the energy sector and what's going on. They're just pulling along with it. Maybe a little bit of a flight to quality, you know, get that dividend. Well, yeah, maybe inflation 7-8%, but some of these stocks, the yields are still coming down. And if there's a look to throwing it into the energy and utilities, I mean, they've been, you know, over the years, I know a lot of people that have been, you know, underperformed the market with utilities. But then when the market goes down, utilities have been a little bit more of a safe haven. And now if you've been a long-term investor in them, you know, reinvesting dividends and things like that, I don't know. I mean, these are really unusual moves. I've never seen
it. It's been overbought for a long time. Yeah. It's a safety trade. It doesn't make sense in a rising interest rate environment.
No, not at all.
No. But this is the market that doesn't make any sense. So it does what it wants to do. I mean, right now, safety trade. We're concerned, obviously, with the Ukraine situation. People feel safe in utilities, and that's why they continue to go up. So it's a safety trade in the overall. And overall, obviously, 2022 hasn't been a risk-off year. So it's not surprising in that way that utility stocks are strong. But in a rising interest rate environment, why would I want to put my money in a 4% utility stock when interest rates are going straight up for cash? So, I mean, you're still losing to inflation in a 4% utility stock. So,
we talked to Mark about it yesterday, and, you know, he kind of just shrugged his head, too. But, you know, price don't lie. Things going up. I mean, I've never seen Duke make 8 higher lows, 8 higher highs, probably 8 higher closes, 7 of 8 higher closes there. So, we'll see. Doesn't look maybe just keep an eye on that all-time closing high, 111.66. If you guys worried about taking some profits in these, always keep an eye on the closing price.
One area that I think most people aren't watching in utilities is water plays here. Look at VWTR. I talked about this one on Money Mitch. Water plays are actually getting a big boost on up. If you take a look at that one, that one's leading right now, but it's not the only water play. There's a
couple. What's the symbol on that one?
Victor, Washington, Tango, Romeo.
Okay.
And so
I don't follow that company at all. You're going off the board. Small.
No worries. I got some other ones here. You got CWCO.
Like I look at MWA, Mueller.
There you go. That's your water play.
It's one. There's quite a few of them out there too. I mean, they should be moving all with the utility stocks to a certain extent. You would think. What else do you got on the other list?
I'll give you the biggest one, AWK.
That's what I was trying to think of.
I can go through the top.
That's for moving up with the utilities in the last month.
Yep. Yeah, not much though. Not as much as I don't know. Maybe a catch up.
Don't need water anymore.
It looks like it, I guess. No, I think what it is there's been talks of that kind of inflationary trade also starting to hit kind of different assets. I think this could be another asset that you start seeing some higher inflation. So I am just kind of pointing this out because I did see, and I look all the time, I look at my industry kind of tapes here, and I'll show you guys exactly what I've been seeing here. This is important for me, keeping up with those industries. And so I saw this just taking off. So you guys can see here, this is the overall industry in regulated water really taking off in the last kind of 17 days, up about 10%. So just to kind of put another area on your radar than just regulated electricity or diversified utilities. All right, let's go ahead. We got about 1 minute there, Dennis, for the
I'm going to just head off for a few minutes, make Melanie happy in the chat, and I'll be back.
All right, I'll go ahead and I'll let Dennis kind of hang out, and I'll put him in the back. Dennis, just give me a thumbs up when you're ready. All right, let's go ahead. Let's look at the jobs number and see how it hits tape here. Any expectations, Joel?
The job market has not been moving as much on the jobs number. The unemployment's been low for a while, so. Mm-hmm. Just look to see if you can get some follow through from the pre-market action. You can spot your highs and lows here. Everyone's pretty quiet. Like I said, we've been moving more off the CPI data, and we've been moving off the PPI data. Basically, everything that comes out of Powell's mouth is what we've been moving on. So We'll see what, what the market has in store for us. Moments away.
Seeing something hit the tape right now here.
Really tight. No one's even gunning it ahead of time. You see the looks like pretty tight.
U.S. non-farm payrolls coming in here at 431,000 versus 490,000 estimated here. Prior was 678. let's go ahead. Let's take a look at some of the other ones hit the tape here. Looks like unemployment rate for March at 3.6 versus 3.7 estimate. So a little light here. Not looking too bad there. How are we looking on the action there?
In my 100 years of following the markets, I have never seen the S&Ps and the spider move less off a jobs number.
Right? I feel like usually you see a quick move.
No, I mean, no one's even being faked out on it. The primary concern here is, Dennis is going to be back on in like 28 seconds here. Now
you ready? He's ready.
Yeah.
You see?
I made the first trade right off the thing. wanted to see if it was open. So I threw 100 shares of SPY to say, are we open?
You wanted to make sure it was open?
Is the market slow, open? Man.
We're leaking a little bit here.
Yeah, starting to leak a little bit.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. But I see Roggy in the back on there, and why don't we bring her on a few minutes early and get her take on the jobs number?
Let's go ahead and do that. All right. So let's go ahead. Let me put up the banner here. Let's go ahead and bring on Raggy Horner, Managing Director of Futures at Simpler Trader. I'm happy to go ahead and bring her on. This is the first time I get to interview in here. So welcome to the show.
Hey, good. Nice to meet you. And thanks so much. What is going on? Someone give this market
jolt, right?
There you go. Someone get the defibrillator for this market.
Let's get it. All right. So right now we're seeing a little bit of dropping on those farm, kind of the jobs number, but let's talk about kind of the overall kind of market. You saw a drop yesterday going into the close. A lot of the sectors looking weak. Do you feel that was a little bit of kind of more profit taking at the top?
End of month shenanigans, end of quarter shenanigans. There's that typical 3 days before the close tendency for the redemptions. I think the interesting move was that, you know, I'm looking at my charts right now, taking a look at, say, the NASDAQ, which I'm the most bearish in. You know, as long as those 10-year yields are heading higher, it's just the easiest for me to focus on shorting tech. We saw that rejection right around 15,050. And, you know, even through the Asian session, even through this morning pre-market, we're just sitting below, you know, for those of you that look at secret squiggles, right? You look at that 200 EMA that we've just been moving below. And to see this moving lower, this is frankly what I want to see, because I straight up did not participate in any of that FOMO MOMO. It just didn't make any sense to me. Waited for a ceiling. So I feel like I'm finally getting a trade after 10 or 12 days of bullishness.
I got to say, the patience there, I thank you on the patience, because I was in the same chair. I was here and thinking, what? I'm feeling illogical right now. And so when I feel those types of moments, what I try to do is a lot is just put my cash back into my pocket, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I respect that a lot. And I'm kind of wondering now, we did get above kind of, I was watching the market breaths really start kind of shifting on over. You saw the 50 kind of get up there, even towards the 60%. I've been watching the SMA 200 getting on up there slowly. It got towards 36%, looking to see if we could ever break 40%, really get a lot of these stocks in the bullish zone. Are you starting to see the market breath change a little bit out there?
I'm going to say something that's going to sound like heresy. I actually don't look at it.
That's important.
You know, and so, and but by the way,
you more now, Rocky. I don't look at it either.
You know, I know that everybody has all the different information that makes us feel confident about the process to make a decision. So I remember as a kid, my mom said, don't yuck somebody else's yum. That's me. So if that's where the confidence comes from, if that's where the information comes from, cool. What I like to do is just crack open the indices, because we live in this high concentration world now. So for me, I'm looking to see if Apple wants to roll over, take XLK lower. And if that happens, those are the dominoes that I'm looking for. So for me, internals are literally internals. You know, what's the index composed of? And especially in a not buy everything market, I think we have to separate the fact that I really don't want to buy a short S&P, but I want to buy a dip in the XLV. And then that's kind of where I'm sitting, where there's corners of the market I would want to short or I want to buy. But the broader indices to me are just nuts.
A mess. Yeah, right. Rocky, a buddy of mine showed me a chart of the dollar versus the ruble, you know, going back. Mm-hmm. And the chart he showed me was a little bit concerning because you had the huge spike in the dollar, right, against the ruble when, you know, things. But and it's come right back in. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your take, you know, and I don't know if that's something that you trade or not, but I just wanted to get your take on, you know, the move and then, you know, the counter move.
So again, I want to sound a little bit like a heretic. If something's in the headlines in terms of a macro, that regard macro headline, I just assume I'm always going to know everything a day late, that I'm a mushroom. I'm in the dark and I'm covered with you know what. So I just steer away from currencies like that where, you know, I remember the Iraqi dinar was a big deal for a while. And then the ruble move, you're right, was just reminded me of GameStop. And so if I'm looking at right now dollar trades, I like the shorts against the euro. I like the shorts against the pound. I'm going to keep it nice and boring. And I'm going to keep it in such a way that I can track the central bank. I can track the data and at least have some sort of map. And some sort of macroeconomic trend to dovetail with the technical trend. I look at the ruble and I'm my hair is going to fall out just, you know, trying to trade that. And I'm a girl. I like my hair. So I don't want wrinkles. I don't want to prematurely age. And I just look at this and go, oh, I'm going to lose 10 years of my life trading this thing.
All right. Well,
but what a cool chart. What a cool chart.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at it and wanted to get your take on it. And just going along those lines, you know, just not try to get too geopolitical here, but you know, the move here, you know, with the war and stuff, I mean, sure, it's a tactical, you know, on the ground, but I think it's more just like an all out assault on like the dollar. I think this is a financial war, and you know, by oil, you know, in the certain circumstances that are anything going. You know, they want to knock down the dollar. And, I was just wondering how you're looking at it, you know, fundamentally, and if you share that opinion or, you know, or you have a contrary opinion on that.
So I think you're so right. I mean, we know that psychology, our fear, greed, you know, that's part of what's happening geopolitically, but I love the way you phrased the question. So where does that map out to logically, not emotionally? So yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So here's how I look at any time we know that other countries might want to unseat the dollar as the reserve currency. We've seen Chinese petrol dollars, then, you know, Russia was trying to twist Europe's arm to try to do the gas deals in rubles. You know, whatever that might be, I'm going to, again, assume that I don't know all the inner workings and shenanigans behind that. But I do know this. In order to unseat the reserve currency, you've got to have something else to replace it, right? So it can't be that there was talk about the euro once upon a time. There was this talk constantly about the yuan, and there's always some other currency that's going to unseat the dollar. I don't see anything that when, you know, for example, Japan wants to buy crude oil from Saudi Arabia, they're suddenly going to do the deal in yen. You know, they're going to do the deal in dollars. And until I see transactions happening outside the US steadily in another currency, there's just no reason to expect that the US dollar is going to be unseated as the reserve currency. So that's the way I look at it. You know, I want to see the deals being done. Yeah.
Okay, just want to, when you're talking about currencies here, we know you've been participating in Bitcoin here, and nice rally in the market, and any, you know, there's no fundamentals related to it, but any technicals you'd like to discuss here?
You're saying no currency is going to derail the dollar. I thought Bitcoin was supposed to do that.
I love Bitcoin, but here's the thing. I can't go... You know, I went out to dinner last night. I'm not going to be able to check out in Bitcoin. I'm not going to whip out my app. And so it's a reserve of you know, it's a storage. That's fine. I mean, it's kind of new gen gold if people want to look at it that way. Here's the thing. I look at it this way. I think I've told you all, and you know, this is when Spencer would, and I would start to riff, right? I look at Bitcoin as the same. You know, I've mentioned when I bought Bitcoin 2016, I didn't know what it was. I just knew it was a currency trading against the US dollar. It was digital Forex for all I knew. I'll be straight up. I still don't get Bitcoin, but I don't have to. And I think sometimes it's okay as a trader to say, I don't know what it is. I just know that technically or from the standpoint of my cost basis, it makes sense to hold it. So when I look at it, when I look at a weekly, and I think the time horizon is a big deal. If I'm looking at a daily time frame of Bitcoin, I'm going to need a Dramamine, bottle of Dramamine on my desk. But I stretch it out to the time horizon that I'm looking at. A weekly, I'm still above the 200 exponential. We still seem to see some decent bottoms around 30,000. You know, I just wish my friends and family would call me when Bitcoin was at 35, not when it's at 65. And that's the problem with Bitcoin, right? That's the problem. It's just that, oh my gosh, it's going through 65. We'll buy it when it revisits 30 and change. And that's not the phone call I'm getting. So I still know there's a lot of...
The phone call indicator.
You all get the same calls, indicator. I'm sure.
That's the best know? Indicator. Yeah,
it, for it sure. really is. It's I'm our new you. Shoe shine boy, right?
When your hairdresser, your barber is going in there and he's Cab giving driving, you the stock Uber tip. Driving. I got the hot stock tip. That's your cell signal right there.
Hey, like you said, just having a little bit of exposure to it, knowing that it could keep coming, I think that's definitely the way to approach it. I don't understand it either. And so I've been thinking about myself starting to dip my toes, but now you see big price movement in Bitcoin. Have you taken any other cryptocurrency coin?
So I bought three in 16. I bought Light, I bought Bit. And I bought something else. Oh gosh, I don't even remember right now. I really just focused on Bitcoin because what little I did know, which frankly is not much more now, is that Bitcoin really was the reserve currency. So I looked at crypto as literally digital Forex. So I tried to ask myself, what's the dollar, right, in these pairs? Because I view them as pairs. What's the dollar? So what's the reserve currency? I just look at Bitcoin as the reserve currency. So that's my focus. I picked some Ethereum up along the way, but most of my holdings are in Bitcoin. And when it pulls back, you know, I'll buy a little bit. But for the most part, what I bought in 2016, I look at is dumb luck. I was expecting it to go to zero. It didn't. So it just really, sometimes we just have to admit, we just got really lucky and we just ride it out. So this is my lucky trade.
I mean, that's okay. And that's the speculation aspect of it. And like you said, put a little bit of money into it. I mean, there's so many people that like to play these meme stocks. And I would say it's okay to do it as if you're using speculative capital and you assume, okay, it's going to go to zero. And if it doesn't go to zero, bonus. And if it makes more money for you. But if you're taking your house and taking a mortgage out and buying a meme stock with it, you know, I don't know if I'd advise doing any of that stuff. So I think you can speculate in anything you want. You don't even have to understand it. I mean, that's a great point that you just made, is so many people want to understand every little intricacy of what they you know, are invested in. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand half the stuff. I'm in Bitcoin too, and I don't get it. So obviously I sold some of it. And then I was like, well, it's just, the story's not going away. So I have the FOMO too. You know, I don't totally get it. And I somewhat think, you know, eventually it could start to go away. Mm-hmm. But, you know, do you take some of your money just in case it doesn't? Maybe you do.
That's something I have, you know, and you bring up a great point. At what point do I say that my purchase in 2016, let's take some off the table? I really haven't yet, because my thought was just leave it alone until you get it. Once you really understand the thesis behind it, then I can start to make a more educated guess. But, you know, it reminds me when I was trading euro dollar in the late 80s, I didn't even know what it was. And I was making a lot of good trades in euro dollar. And someone said, well, what is a euro dollar? And I said, heck, I don't know, but the price action's good. And I think it's okay for us traders to say that. And a lot of times I love when you, you know, when I watch you all, we know what we know and we don't make excuses for what we don't, because kind of going back to just being able to check the boxes of what we need to know to make a trade and knowing that we're never going to know all the moving parts and pieces, which is ridiculous. I guess, you know, somebody might, but the rest of them, I think, are just faking it. And I just assume not fake it. So I don't know is a great answer and I love it.
It's the answer that everybody's afraid to give. You know, people don't, you know, people want to know, and you know, And I know, and JC Peretz, you probably know JC too. And he's the first one, you know, when he starts getting in all the fundamentals. So, I don't know anything about this, but I know the technicals, you know, and he jumps into what he knows. He does very well knowing what he knows and not pretending to know what he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. I think another way to look at it, you know, for the audience is, you know, when you all are bringing up charts, what do we know those charts are representing? The fear, the greed, the personalities, the human aspects. So mm-hmm. I think all of us believe that whatever's out there, known and unknown to us, is factored into price. It's already built into price. Our job is then to just be bullish or bearish on whatever's happening. Or even better, I think the second most important thing to I don't know is I don't have to be in the market right now.
True.
You know?
Yeah. And moments when I feel I don't find logic. And if it doesn't make logic, then I'd rather put my money in my pocket.
Exactly. Exactly. I love it.
We're talking about digital gold here, but let's go to actually gold. What are you seeing in gold now?
I'm Indian, so it's illegal for me to sell this thing. We love our gold. I think we own more gold than central banks in India. So my mom is always asking me, where's gold? Where's gold? always, always. But it's here, you know, when you look at gold as, you know, moving inverse to real yields, nominal yield of a bond minus the rate of inflation, kind of makes sense that it's choppy right now. I do want to be long gold. I am long gold. I love that 1900 level for a trade. But if I look longer term, where I've been buying gold the last, say, 2 years has been closer to 1700, and we've had maybe three hits at that level. So generally speaking, right now, if we can hit 1900, I'll just look for a trade. Maybe we'll hit 2000 again, but I can't short it. I love the idea of a buy. I just need to buy it at the lower end of the range. That's really it.
I'm definitely going to keep on watch. I've been watching gold since kind of the breakout and going to keep watching to see if we can see if inflation keeps rising. And, you know, I've never seen a move like this in gold, at least in my trading career. So definitely been enjoying trading some different names.
I think as long as gold keeps moving higher, you know, one angle that I love is looking at steel right now. So instead of GLD, I've been looking at SLX, XME. I've got a long position, VALE. So copper doesn't look great on the chart, but Freeport-McMoRan is a great proxy. So I have some skin in the game in gold, but I've been looking really more at metals and mining right now, not necessarily jumping into, say, GDX and GDXJ, but, you know, SLX, XME, and those names. Those have been really good. Freeport-McMoRan, as I mentioned before, too.
I think I know what your answer is going to be on this one, but if you're going to wait and react to see, you know, for, you know, the pace of interest rate hikes, I mean, we've here, you know, two or three, and I admit I was kind of on the, you know, on the low red things. Now you're hearing 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I mean, you know, not, it's definitely not transitory anymore, the inflation. So I was just wondering if your crystal ball had anything, or you're just going to roll with the punches and see what the Fed does.
So here's the crystal ball that I look at. It's literally a crystal ball. Fed fund futures, you know, the CME, the CME has that great, you can Google it, Fed watch tool, FOMC watch tool. And they've got every single meeting listed with the probabilities for where the target rate is going to be. That is unbelievably accurate. When we were going into March and everybody thought, Powell is not going to hike rates because of Ukraine. I'm thinking, based on what? You know, there's so much gut people will throw at a market. I'm thinking, my intestines don't make my trading decisions, right? I want to have a clearer picture of what's being discounted, what's expected. And March was pretty steady, just quarter point, quarter point, quarter point. A couple of times it was maybe less than 2 or 3% hold. A couple of times it was maybe 20 plus percent. Half point hike, but that quarter point column
stuck in there. I know.
Just stood in. Now the half point for May is all sorts of tall and awesome right now. So there's that half point expectation with that quarter point definitely being the minimum. So I just take a look at that CME FedWatch tool. And yeah, it's you got it. Yeah. So you know what I'm looking at. We got the same crystal ball.
Yeah, Spencer brings that one up all the time too. So I got to give a shout out to that. Thank you for joining us today, Raggy Horner. If you guys want to check her out, where could they find you?
You know, I'm on all the typical social media, Raggy Horner, Twitter and Insta. And, my main place, my main clubhouse is simplertrading.com. We have a mastery there, the Sector Secrets Mastery, and I share my trades and And if not, I'm just waiting for you guys to call me so I can come back on the show.
There you guys have it. I know that a lot of people in the chat were wondering, and they said, can we get you on more often? So we'll definitely be reaching on out. Appreciate you coming on today.
Hey, it's great meeting you. Great meeting you. Thanks so much. Good to see you guys.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's keep it going, guys. Let's go and take some ticker time now. I want to drop in some tickers. If you guys got something that you guys want to take a look at, definitely throw it on up. I'm going to keep on watch, at least for me. I'm going to be watching some lithium plays. So,
oh, man, have they gone, Mitch? These things are just blast off into orbit. LAC.
Full disclosure, I am long on the LTHM. So I do have
one. We both still have that one.
I thought you sold it, Dennis.
I sold a piece. I've still got a chunk. That was the one we picked up with Jason Raznick around $5. And you said it came from Gene.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So I didn't hear it from Gene. I heard it from Jason, but maybe that came from Gene. So anyways, Jason was on our show and he was buying it $5. I was like, I'll throw some money in that $5. And it got up to like 15. I sold a piece. And it got up to 25, and I sold another piece. And I've still got a piece. So
let me know when you sell.
It was looking good on the chart, to be honest with you. It looks healthy. I don't know. I think it actually looks healthy. And if you think about it, I mean, we are still – the EV story is not over. The EV story is not over by far. So what does every EV need? It needs lithium. So LAC, which was one I had for a long time, and I finally did sell the rest of that. I wish I wouldn't have because now it's taken off here again. Those are my two lithium plays that I was playing. Those LTHM and LAC. Is there some other ones?
There are some other ones. I can give you guys some names, but I want to tell you why LAC seems like the best one here.
Yeah, talk
what's
to me.
Going on is really this was all started bringing because of what the president Biden started bringing the Defense Act. And then you got to start taking a look at what could really get produced, right? We're looking at U.S. produced lithium. So if you take a look at Lithium Americas, Thacker Pass, this is actually would be the first one that would get closest to development in the continental U.S. So this is why I think you're seeing that interest focused on LAC versus the others. But there is other players, of course, in lithium. You could take a look at a stock that's been ripping I'll call it XSPAC here. MP Materials has really been pushing lately. If you take a look at that chart, look at that. Good looking SPAC, right?
That's probably the best looking SPAC ever.
Right? I got to give it to them. They definitely have been holding their price action. And then I'll go to another one. Dennis knows this one, PLL.
Yeah, that's one I trade sometimes too. And that one's been blasting off into orbit as well. I mean, these are the smaller names, so I guess they go more, right?
Yeah, and there's some other ones. I like this other one that most people don't talk about, SQM.
SQM?
Chalet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the big thing about this one, it has diversification. It's not only lithium. And so that's why I like this one. It gives you some exposure to some different materials, not just only lithium. But you can see it's been also heavily trending. Look at that monthly chart. Really strong stock.
Really blasted off. I just wonder what the daily volume is in this one.
It's high, Joel. This thing trades.
Oh, not bad. Not bad at all.
Trades, no worries, Joel. I didn't bring you a crazy one.
These aren't penny stocks.
No, I pay attention to these all the time. These are the ones I watch. Also brought up in the chat, ALB. You can take a look.
ALB at that. I had, and I couldn't have messed this one up more. And I had this one back in the long-term portfolio from, I think, $68.
Ooh.
And I sold it and then panicked out during the COVID bubble. And this was when I sold it, and it actually went lower after I sold it, but I didn't rebuy it. We know it went down to 50. And I was pretty happy that I had sold around like 68, I think. And it just, you know, obviously COVID, you know, didn't end up being the zombie apocalypse. And 80, 90, 100, 200, almost $300 later, I'm like, why did I ever screw that one up? That's a bit, that's the, like, if you want like blue chip, that's the blue chip lithium play. But it's not going to move around as some of those smaller plays. And LTHM was the old FMC spinoff, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a spinoff. Let's go towards, let's take a look at maybe some of the let's go to the EV names, because there was a second there that they started looking like they were coming back into favor. A lot of this is from what I was looking at, and I was starting to see some battery names that were coming into favor like QS. But look at Tesla's move yesterday, and you did see a down move in that. I'm trying to pay attention to Tesla, really, to tell me how, if we're going to get maybe the favor to come back into EV, because Tesla did run for a good while, then now it's taking a little bit of a pause. But if you look at Ford and GM, it looked like they were trying to catch up to Tesla. They had a good day, and then yesterday they just gave that all back. I'm wondering, what are you guys thinking about this chart, and what do you see, Joel?
Here's the problem with Ford, GM, you know, and so much, is that I still, when I sit back and I look, and I, you know, look at the overall environment we're in, and we're going to a rising interest rate environment here, there's going to be less cash here for everyone going forward. And people obviously are going to have to still eat. They still need shelter. They still need certain things. But big ticket items are going to get pushed away, especially with the automotives, with the way the prices have went up there. People are just like, I'll drive my truck for another couple of years. So this is the issue that all of these, you know, things face here. You know, another, my buddy Jeff was telling me, he's talking to a pool store guy, and they've been so busy. And all of a sudden he's not that busy. And it's like, whoa, what just changed? Well, you know, you were busy off the bat. You pulled all that demand forward with COVID, and pools maybe not the best example, but people are going to have less money for big ticket things. There's no coincidence that RH is struggling right now. We've talked about this already. Williams Sonoma, the home builders. You can clearly see when people aren't going to be buying a new home at these prices, there's less people that can afford them. So even despite Lennar having that great quarter, remember when it went to $92, it's like, I'd sell it, because I think going forward here, it's going to be a hell of a lot less demand for home, for new homes. And Lennar, they can't catch a bid. I mean, you have an S&P that's been going straight up besides the last couple of days. These stocks are still going straight down. There's separation happening here. And that concerns me. I am long a piece of GM and Ford, but that does concern me even about those, that I think eventually the EV story can make these stocks get hot again. But right now, I think you're going to have a demand problem for some of these companies.
Yeah, rising input costs, right?
That doesn't help either.
Rising
and
wages.
At a certain point, it's just demand destruction, Joel. I mean, at a certain point on some of these big ticket items, you're going to see less demand. Houses, cars, pools.
Rising wages.
They're going to get squeezed on both ends. We could just stop. And, you know, if you really want to put on the macro hat, though, here, this was a dead cat bounce on the S&P. And you start thinking, well, what's going to be the driver? People aren't giving up their cell phones. So, you know, that's why Apple maybe goes first, you know, back to the highs. You know, maybe it's like the best home, because this isn't even discretionary anymore. This is like essential for most people.
Yeah, true.
It really is. This is the last thing people are giving up. But are people going to give up a new car? Yeah, that's definitely something they could give up.
People going to stop buying houses?
Yeah, the new houses. Yes, Mitch, for sure. 100% building new houses. I just went through it. The average home build, the new home build in the States was $492,000 now. Who's affording that? So they go from 300 to 400 to 500. All of a sudden, it's like at a certain point in time, people are like, well, it's just too expensive for me to buy a new house. I'll renovate my current house. Or, you know, maybe I'll just, you know, maybe I don't even have renovation. Maybe I'll just tough it out in my current house.
Yeah.
So there is definitely an issue. And you can see it in the home builders. Like, look at KB Homes.
Yeah.
Record earnings. $50 a share in January. It's $32. And you're like, what's going on? There's so much value here. It's trading like 4 or 5 times earnings. These were pull forward earnings. People were building new houses. They're excited to live in their house forever. People want to go out and do things now. We're getting past the virus. But it's not just that. It's people have less money to spend on all these things. There's less discretionary income out there. And that's not going away anytime soon. We're going up a half. We're going to go up another half. If they are serious about tackling this inflation issue, it's the home builders that you want to be selling,
yeah,
not buying, even though they look cheap.
Yeah, it's interesting. In Florida, they're bringing up a term, rent rich. You can only pay the rent, can't pay anything else.
There's a lot of people, and you feel sorry for the other people that are going to suffer through this. Yeah. I mean, we've got a Fed, you know, that obviously was too accommodating for too long, and now inflation's happening. And it's the little guy that really gets hurt, the person that's, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. All of a sudden, their paycheck isn't going up enough to meet their bills, or to, you know, or they're really struggling. They don't have that extra income to go do fun things. So, and that starts hitting other things too. I mean, we can say we want to get out there and do stuff, but if you're struggling to pay the bills, you're maybe not going on that yearly trip. Maybe you're not doing certain things. So then that starts to hit other things as well. So you think about all these rallies we have, like, why can't Disney catch a bid, Joel? They're doing a lot of things right. The parks are busy, but you know what? You go into one of those parks, $125 or something for one person to get in there. Yep. I mean, that's a discretionary purchase that maybe people are going to, you know, there's still going to be lots of people at Disney. I'm not saying people aren't going to go there. But if 10% of people who were going to go there decide not to go there, that's a big fall off in the earnings report. So, I mean, there's a reason here. And I own a little bit of Disney, too. I own a little bit of the stuff in the long-term portfolio for the belief that eventually these companies, you know, eventually, you know, we're going to get through all this. But the immediate impact to higher interest rates is going to hit a lot of these companies that stocks are not participating in the recent rally.
I still want to go to Blizzard Beach, though. So I think. All right. I'm going to let you guys finish things up. And I'll talk to you later on.
Joel on the Blizzard Beach. Hey. All right,
I just got rid of the blizzard up here where I'm in Georgian Bay. The snow has finally left. It was 52 degrees yesterday where I am at. I'm like, this is so wonderful to actually, even though it was windy, I was like, it's just wonderful to be outside and not freezing my butt off. And, you know, I'm wonderful to not see snow because the snow and still a couple little piles of snow, but I can actually see my lawn now. So unbelievable. That you
hey,
know, this
it's winter. Definitely
so good. The last place I want to go is Blizzard Beach.
Well, I got a quick question here. Was it a tough winter or was it a light winter?
This up here felt like a long winter. It didn't feel like it was like the toughest winter, but it just felt like it never ended. Okay. I mean, we started getting snow up in Georgian Bay. It felt like October, you know, and then you're in October. You know, November, December, you're dumped
six months,
on. January,
six
you're dumped
months of
on.
Snow.
February, you're dumped on. March, you're still getting snow. I'm like, it snowed 2 days ago. I was like, come on, we're almost April here. Stop with the snow. So maybe I shouldn't have moved up to Georgian Bay. Maybe I should have moved down south with everybody else who's a hell of a lot smarter than I am.
Hey, you stay in the winter. Don't worry, man. You own that winter.
You like the snow, though, Mitch, because you like doing snow activities up there in Denver.
You got hockey,
up on the hills
dude.
There's still some snow.
You got real hockey up there in Canada.
None of this
U.S. hockey, you know, on this fake ice. You guys got literally outside. You guys go play.
Well,
hockey.
We can do have the outdoor rinks. Yeah, I'm skating on the bay. I made an outdoor rink on the bay. So you're out there and you're like doing and you're skating on the bay. It's awesome.
Hey,
but
gotta
it's
enjoy
frigid.
That.
I mean, it's frigid in those outdoor arenas. So you can do them, but then the kids are out there for like 20 minutes and they're like, nah, I want to go inside. They're all bundled up. They're like, this is awesome out here, making snowmen skating around. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'm getting cold.
Go Panthers. Ooh, Dennis, what do you think about that? We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not a big Florida fan. I'm Oilers, so.
I know you're an Oilers fan.
It's been up and down. As being an Oilers fan, it's kind of like this, so I don't even know what to say.
It's kind of like being a Florida Panthers fan, too, so don't worry.
Well, that's the problem. We've talked about sports before. There's 32 teams in the league, and only one can win every year, so like 97% chance you're going home unhappy. Unless I guess you got to cheer for those really good teams. If you're cheering for the Yankees and baseball, it's like your percentages are a lot better. But when you're a Tigers fan, it's been a long time. You know, we looked good there for a little bit with the Tigers there when we had Cabrera and, you know, those years. But we got to the World Series twice, but we couldn't pull it out. And I don't know now. It's tough.
Hey, Detroit sports, man. Let's keep
going.
That's
Detroit sports. The Lions just want to get, you know, we just want to stop being the worst team in the league. It'd be nice to not be last. Feels like last anyways. All right. No more sports talk. You're depressing me.
You see what happened? Go have a good day. Have a good weekend.
You too, Mitch. Everyone have a great weekend. Lovers, haters, we love all you guys. Thanks for coming out. Okay.
Hey, like always, guys. All right, we're going to go ahead up and start wrapping on up here. Looks like we're calling in Audible. Looks like I need to call in Audible. We're going to go straight into live trading, and then we'll be getting on over to All Access and potentially maybe going back to all live trading. We'll figure that out as we go along the way here. I hope that you guys enjoyed pre-market prep today. Raggy Horner joining us.
please give her a shout out. I think she did a great job on the show. And I saw a lot of people in the chat want to go ahead and get to know her. So look in the description below. I'll make sure I also get her kind of social links in there so you guys can find and add her. All right, let's go ahead. Let's wrap it on up here. For pre-market prep, up next, we'll be getting towards live trading. If you guys want to go get on over there and see how we trade live, join Ryan, Zunaid, and I, and who knows, maybe a little cow action will be there, and we'll see how the market trades. Right now, we are leaking a little bit into the open here. Of course, the jobs number is kind of helping out a little bit of that, but I am finding that we are kind of just holding sideways here. We'll see if we can get towards Monday low, which was the concern for Joel. We'll keep watching on that. And Monday's low, just to kind of give really that level, is 450.06. So that's kind of the level that we'll be watching to see if we break Monday's low. Until then, up next, you guys got live trading. Hit the like button. I do see over 1,200 people here. This is how we keep this show free, guys. You know, pre-market prep is absolutely free. How do we keep it free is you guys supporting us, smashing that like button and hitting the share button, letting everybody know that this is the best pre-market show that there is out anywhere. I mean, you guys tell me what's better. There's nothing better than pre-market prep. See you next time, guys. And up next, you guys got live trading.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards and save big money. Right now, all stock outlets with USB ports are on sale. Ditch the need for bulky USB adapters. Upgrade your home with features like ultra-fast charging, allowing you to charge your smart devices up to 40% faster than standard USB outlets. Also, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and check out all the great deals happening this week. Save big money.